Hi, my name is Scott Jones. I'm director of the Electronic Frontiers track. This morning's talk is about spam. This is more about spam from a individual user's perspective, what you can do as a user. We'll have another talk about spam this afternoon at 4 o'clock, and that will be more on the server side, what you can do as a mail administrator and what mail administrators are doing to actually fight spam. But we're going to start today's talk with what you can do as an individual user. And can we bring up channel 5 a little more? Check. That's good.
Oh, I guess everybody's looking at me.
I'm waiting for the pan.
My name is Sean Wipke. I should probably pull this a little closer. My name is Sean Wipke. I was helping to organize some of these panels this week. I worked for about 2 years as the head of the abuse department at an ISP up in Virginia called Cornerstone Networks, and now I'm the operations and systems administrator for MrGoodBucks.com.
I'm Joe Gilliam. I guess I could be best thought of as Joe Anyman. Started off about 5 years ago living on AOL and took all the slings and arrows of spam and all the other different forms of abuse and quietly taught myself how to fight the stuff. And I can honestly say my very public AOL address is now down to 3 spams a week. I'll tell you how in the panel.
I'm Margie Arvin. I'm with the Mail Abuse Prevention System, and I'm part of the RBL team and the volunteer coordinator.
And this lady is your friend. I'm probably the most vocal around here. I got a couple of questions to ask the audience. How many of you would you consider to be fairly internet literate?
Okay.
That's good. How many of you consider yourself to be complete greenies? No greenies? You're not a greenie. Okay, because that's going to affect how I approach this. How many of you know what a cookie is? Okay, that's very good. How many of you know how to report email spam to an abuse desk? Good. How many of you are AOLers? Well, at least I'm not alone. Great.
Sorry.
Okay. AOL gets no respect. We're the biggest group out there, but we don't get any respect at all.
We respect you more than Web TV.
True. Okay. Well, there's more of us out there, but I have to say that I've heard a lot of hackers say that AOL is the internet on training wheels. Well, I happen to not agree with that completely. But I find that if you're going to learn how to do something, AOL is a good place to start, and then you can move on from there. I got a couple of interesting stories that I want to tell right off the bat first. About 5 years ago, I went online as Snotco at AOL. That's, by the way, that stands for Southern and New Orleans Telegraph Company. It's not a sinus remedy, okay? I did the most typical mistake that an AOLer can do. I posted a profile. I stayed out of chat rooms. I knew better than to get involved in chat rooms, but I posted a profile. And I posted marketing information. The next thing I know, I'm getting 20 emails a day from marketers. And I'm going, what's going on here? I'm not visiting these sites. What's this? What's all this crap? I soon discovered that my email address was being sold on CD-ROMs to bulk emailers. And the next thing I know, I'm getting gay porno spam. Okay? And what's even wilder is I started complaining to AOL, and I made the first mistake that you make, is I complained to the sender, which is a big mistake nowadays. You never complain or return
to
a sender. And that's right. Never ask to be removed from an address because you've just confirmed to them that it's a good email address. Okay? And you're on every list. You may be removed from that list, but your address is going to get sold. So the next thing you know, your address is sold in a bulk CD-ROM, whatever.
And then you'll get spammed to buy that CD-ROM.
That's right. So I started fighting, and I enlisted the help, and I'm going to I told the man that I was going to plug his name. The man who got me involved in fighting spams, man's name is Dave Bennett, Spam Frog, among other names, and he was very instrumental in teaching me what I needed to know. And can we use spam mail publicly?
Sure.
There is an administrative list called SpamL, and it's mostly technical. It's mostly ISPs. It's mostly abuse critters.
And flame wars.
Hmm?
Yeah.
And flame wars.
Yes. Yeah. Mostly those people who actually do the technical business of keeping your email boxes clear of spam. So he taught me what I needed to know to get started. He introduced me to SpamMail, and I got up on SpamMail and made a complete idiot of myself the first time I logged on, which is typical for a new greenie. But I learned what I needed to do, and I learned who to complain to and what to do to rid my box. And it took work. It took work because my address is very public, and you don't live with a public address like this and not get spammed. So it took a year of constant complaints, learning how to track these people down and complaining to actually rid myself of most of it. And now, 3 spams a week. That's all I get. And those people, I work on them real hard.
Some of mine.
Yeah.
You're bored.
I tell you. Now I've hogged the microphone long enough.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about, too, was mostly about reporting the spam. And just a couple of things about that. The basic thing is learning how to read the headers, which is actually kind of difficult if you don't have somebody to show you exactly how to do it. There's some resources on the net to do that. And also, there are some places like SpamCop, which will report the spam for you. There's also, depending on your ISP, some ISPs will, if you send them the spam, they'll take care of it for you. And when I worked at Cornerstone, I saw that Errol's did that, and so I implemented the same thing there, and had a steady core of users that sent me all their spam, and I reported on it to the appropriate people. And one of the things that you do see is that it actually does help some. There's been a recent set of mirrors on a web page called Behind Enemy Lines. I don't know how many of y'all heard of it. Basically, it was a guy who got pissed off and hacked a spammer system, took everything off of there, including the naked pictures of herself, and posted them publicly. They're not pretty pictures.
No.
Anyway, one of the things that he got was a list of email addresses that she had, which were listed as never spam these addresses. And so just kind of on a whim, I went through and looked, and it had my address in there and several different incarnations, and it also had a number of the users that I helped report spam for and a number of different of their forms.
I was there, too.
Was, yes.
Yeah, Radona Garst.
Radona.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Needless to say, she's not happy about having those pictures on the net, I don't believe, but tough luck. It also kind of shows, too, that what the spammers will do to get your addresses and to send out your mail, because there was evidence in there of stock fraud and of intruding on systems, all kinds of different things, which are...
Yeah, phishing for accounts. AOL. That's mm-hmm. actually something you might want to go
into. Yeah, phishing for AOL accounts.
Any accounts, because I've seen a bit on Mindspring and AT&T, too.
Yeah, it's particularly with the biggest places, but what a lot of times spammers will do is they'll spam a whole bunch of addresses and claim that they're official representatives of the online service and that you need to reconfirm your account because they lost some data or something to that effect. And so instead of sending you to a web page on their official system, they send you to like a GeoCities web page. And where there you're supposed to refill in your account information, which of course goes right to the spammer and they take advantage of it. Needless to say, if AOL contacts you and tells you to go to GeoCities, it's probably not them. but it's another way how they can confirm addresses and steal credit card numbers. That's slightly more illegal, but I just completely forgot what else I was going to say. So I'll let you go.
My turn. The one thing that people do not understand, and a lot of people say, you know, why do you waste your time fighting spam? There are 25 million small businesses in the United States. If 10% of them decide to send you one email advertisement a year, that's 6,500 emails a day.
There goes your bandwidth.
Well, the internet will melt. Number one, it can't handle it. Number two, if you figure the average spam is 2 to 3K and your mailbox is 10 megs, you're not going to get legitimate mail either. And just hitting delete $6,500 times a day isn't going to get it. The object is it's got to be controlled before it reaches that point. And right now, a lot of the problem is what we call main sleaze, which is legitimate companies that have decided that email marketing is the way to go. So just because it comes from a legitimate company doesn't mean it's not spam and doesn't mean you shouldn't report it and try to make them stop.
One other interesting place I found my address collected from was abuse reports.
Depends on who you report to. You need sometimes be careful.
Oh, yeah.
I've had one of my more favorite spammers, a guy advertising a casino out of Texas, and I reported him, and his ISP basically just sent my email on to him, mm-hmm. including my SIG file, which was my corporate SIG file with my phone number in there. So I started receiving phone calls at work, which is this irate man yelling and cursing at me. And it was kind of amusing, too, because we have caller ID on our phones at work, and also any voicemail that's saved is saved in a WAV format, so that I had a computer file of him doing this. So I called him back and explained everything, just got more cursing, and then he called back and cursed at me some more and demanded to talk to my boss, and he eventually got all the way up to the head of the company, who evidently, according to his secretary and everything, was the first time he'd ever hung up the phone on somebody because he just couldn't talk to this guy. And finally, I got his upstream's attention, and they had been evidently itching for the chance to just cut loose the entire ISP that he was connected through. And they took care of the situation. I stopped getting the phone calls, and he also would spend time harassing us. He'd call long distance from Texas and just call the company general line, and when the phone was picked up, yell, "Hillbillies," and hang up. And we had caller ID. We saw it was coming, and we just found it incredibly amusing. We would put it on speakerphone, actually. So anyway, the abuse department took care of it, though, of his upstream. You can always go up higher, and it's usually you'll hit somebody that'll do something, hopefully. The funny part, though, of that story was that the abuse department of his upstream, after they took care of it, wrote me back a little bit later, and they said, "Oh, By the way, do you have a copy of that voicemail? This guy is hysterical. We want to. So, that was some of the problems you have whenever you send your address on hold. That's why a lot of people, when they actually report to spams, will cut out their address and just leave it blacked out. Like if you use Spam Cop, which I brought up on the screen there, it'll block out what the address that it was sent to was. That's useful when you're reporting it. Admittedly, whenever you're, if you're, for the people on the reporting side, that's not always the most convenient thing. If you're a white hat ISP trying to take care of a spamming problem, sometimes you do actually need those addresses. Mm-hmm. But
and you should always send an abuse report from a repliable address, even if it's a Hotmail account, because if they need more information, they have to be able to get a hold of you.
That's right. Whenever I get abuse reports, if somebody sent it from a non-repliable address, it went straight in the trash can. I wasn't even going to look at it. It's basically one of the biggest thing that I have to emphasize when you're reporting spam is not to, don't drop to the level of the spammers. Don't curse. Don't get self-righteous on it. Just try and explain the problem. And if they refuse to work with you, then go up higher. But don't just sit there and, wave your fist in the air. It doesn't really accomplish anything.
The abuse desk's job is to protect their network. The fact that that also gets our spam to stop is really nice, but it's kind of an added bonus.
There are a few out there that won't cooperate. For example, I've had some bad luck with angelfire.com, and I see you recognize the name.
Not cooperate?
And I was wondering if you hadn't, what do you do after that if someone ignores your request to remove a site that's slamming you or something like that?
You go to their upstream.
What does that mean?
Whenever you do a trace route on a site, it'll show you where it's where you're going to get to them. It'll show you who their ISP is. And you go, if they don't respond, you go to their ISP and say, I've been trying to get your downstream customer to help take care of this problem, and give them the whole story again. And some upstreams will be happy to help. It's also kind of, disconcerting if an ISP is balking, because admittedly an ISP is in business to make money. And most of them don't want to just, kick off accounts as fast as possible, because that's losing them money unless they have, solid proof of it. But if they're dithering around trying to hold off or whatever, and you go to their upstream, and then their upstream usually has a policy against spamming, they'll have to take action on it.
And if they don't, you can talk to us.
Okay, and your information is going to be posted somewhere here?
Do you have a page
that you can put up on the screen?
Okay. I don't know, for those that don't know what MAPS is, we maintain lists. We maintain the RBL, the RSS, and the DAL.
Real-time black hole list.
There you go.
The RBL is where all bad spammers go to become an intranet. What the RBL is a list of unrepentant or spam-friendly or spam-neutral addresses. It is a list of IPs. It is used by ISPs or other providers to stop traffic from problem domains. It's done in one of two ways. It's either done on email only, which means that when the mail servers see it, that it will reject mail from that address and say, we're sorry, you're on the RBL. The other thing, that some backbones will use it at the routers, which means there is no traffic to those addresses. They no longer exist to anybody behind those routers. Providers that will not talk to you generally will talk to us. If they don't, they know that their mail will bounce.
It's basically making the other routers of the internet ostracize that one where the spam's coming from.
Basically, yes. It is a...
Sounds great.
It is... actually, it's a boycott. It's exactly what it constitutes, and about 40% of the internet uses it. And we have submission procedures. Anybody can make a nomination. So if you have problems, there are, you can send nominations to us and say, we have a problem.
But doesn't that
that was, if you notice, that was a trace route. It just decided to go away right away. No, it wouldn't run.
Did you do it from run?
Yeah, I did it from but it wouldn't do it from the MS-DOS prompt. So.
Oh, by the way, one of the things that most of y'all need to know is, why do spammers do this? They get paid 3 cents an email address. That's why. The more email addresses they can send to, the more money they get. And one more thing that was mentioned. Do y'all understand what the difference is between a white hat and a black hat? A white hat refers to an ISP, Internet Service Provider, who is friendly to abuse complaints and does follow up on the complaints and actually kills accounts, or we say nuke accounts, that are problematic. Black hat, just as it sounds, they don't, excuse my French, they don't give a shit.
One of the things I wanted to go back to also was about being, when you're reporting complaints, about being polite. It is very possible that you receive what looks like spam to you. It's unsolicited email, and it's an honest mistake. And the problem is that if it's an honest mistake and you sit there and just rant and scream at the person, you're honestly, you know, making more of a threat out of yourself than was of the person who sent the mail. One example I can give was my company that I work for now. None of the people that are in my company have been there more than about 6 months. It's a brand new company. And one of our other employees worked for a local newspaper. And they all asked to be signed up on our list, our mailing list. Well, whenever he brought over the addresses, he neglected to put in a dash in the domain name. So all the domain names with the dash left out, we sent out our mailing list, and the mails went to another person out in California. And for about the next 2-3 hours, every 5 minutes, we got email from this guy yelling at my boss and cursing and claiming that we're spamming him, and he was calling her voicemail and leaving threats in her voicemail. And that's the kind of thing that makes anti-spammers look bad. It helps give more presence to the spammers. That's why when you report something, you report it back to the abuse department. A lot of times companies, if you get company mail, the company might not be condoning it. I've seen a couple of times where a company has said, we will not spam, and then some overzealous market droid goes, I found this great CD-ROM, and just sends out mail advertising his company when his company didn't have any knowledge of it. That's another time when you report it, that if you're just respectful about it and point out that you know what happened, a lot of times you just get the market droid canned.
I don't know. I've always been a little concerned about the black hole lists that I've seen around the internet. It's a good idea in and of itself. The problem is that you inevitably are going to run into the problem that you're going to have some people are going to have legitimate email cut off.
I'm sorry?
There's the problem when you have the black hole lists of legitimate email dying at some point in there.
Yes. That's
right.
There is collateral damage.
And is this basically the responsibility?
Thank you.
is it my understanding that you consider it the responsibility of whoever's, you know, on this list or whoever's over the people on this list to get them off in order to keep to minimize said claim?
Our goal is to stop the spam. And we do whatever it takes before a listing to stop the spam. We make phone calls, we write letters, we get people to sign agreements. Unsolicited bulk email.
Or unsolicited commercial email. UCE or UBE is how it's shorthand.
Also,
most of the time you'll see people refer to it as unsolicited commercial email, but really bulk is a more appropriate term because it's irregardless of content.
And
if you get religious propaganda during the NATO bombing of Serbia, there was people spamming about that.
Also, have you guys seen the spam that's directed at emails that forward people's pagers? and similar and similar things like that. What are some more interesting venues for spam that you've seen?
Emergency pager at a backbone.
Also,
RBL at mailabuse.org, which is the nomination submission address. The two directors of MAPS get spammed a lot. Abuse desks get spammed.
That was honestly one of the ones I never understood was the spam reporting I did, which was spam-report@cstan.net. It got spammed on a regular basis, which kind of made life easy for me. It was, you know, all the headers were there. But it's if the spammers don't even take the time to get out the abuse and spam report addresses out of there, it kind of makes you wonder, you know, how much they really, you know, care about what the work they're doing.
There's an interesting thing I want to bring up. There is a set of rules about spammers. I know right off the bat two of them that apply to every case. Spammers are stupid and spammers lie. That's the two golden rules. Anytime you see a spam advertising something, there is usually either a clueless marketing executive behind it or an out-and-out scam, which means lying. So, for God's sake, never reply to a spam market campaign. Never, ever, please. Because all you're asking for is trouble.
In addition to reporting to ISPs, I often report to offline agencies like attorney general's offices, the postal inspector, all sorts of other things.
And that's security, particularly in Washington, California, Virginia, and some of the other states, because spam is illegal. There are 14 states that have passed laws against unsolicited mail.
So I get quite a lot of, you know, stock fraud, cable descramblers and stuff like that. I live in Georgia. There's an office.
Enforcement@sec.gov.
Yes, I already know about it. But there's also an office in Georgia that's, the Governor's Office of Consumer Affairs, and they'll take faxed complaints, mailed complaints, and stuff like that. And most states have similar agencies.
Can you get viruses by spam?
Yes.
Technically, viruses like Melissa and I Love You and other ones that propagate themselves, if they propagate themselves, I mean, technically that is a form of unsolicited email. So it just depends on how nitpicky you want to get with the definitions.
The other thing for folks that are using HTML-enabled email programs like Outlook, Outlook Express, I believe Eudora, Netscape, Hotmail, and I think AOL.
Yes, AOL is definitely HTML.
People are starting to put JavaScripts in the email, and I have seen some extremely nasty JavaScripts that are basically password harvesting JavaScripts that are sent with spam. So I would not recommend that you let anything run on your system without permission. Yes. Turn off the JavaScripts. That I don't know. Can you?
Yes, you can. Talk to me offline.
One thing I want to show real fast is we brought up a traceroute on the screen here. I'll just kind of give you a quick description of it. Up here is basically where we are. Kind of scroll off the top. And as you look down, you see these addresses. These are the Mindspring addresses. These are the routing that it's taking through Mindspring. And whenever it hits up through Netcom, and you see it switches over to Alternet right here, which is, right here. That's Alternet's UUNet, one of the biggest backbones here. And it goes down through Alternet down to the server that we're traced around to, inferno.serversystems.net.
Yeah, if you were receiving spam from inferno.serversystems.net, the first step would be to talk to the owner of that system. And if you don't get a response, then you move up the chain to comstar.net. And if you don't get a response from those people, then you move up the chain to UUNet, which is alter.net.
So can you show, AngelFire?
Yeah, you can definitely. I mean, you can see who the upstream for AngelFire is and then complain to them.
AngelFire.com?
Yes.
Yeah. One of the more useful tools that they have on the net for fighting spam for systems like this is spam.abuse.net. Run by a fellow named John Levine, and they basically have a lookup system there. It's kind of similar to the whois system that you do on domains, but you do a whois through whois.abuse.net, and it will tell you who the appropriate abuse contacts are for that domain. So if you did it for example, for cstone.net, it would come up and say abuse at cstone.net. And if you have some place with one of the weirder reporting criteria, such as AOL's was, it would come up and tell you toss email one. If you register with the site, it'll also give you a kind of a redirection service where you don't have to remember all those addresses. All you do is whenever you get a spam and you're reporting it, instead of reporting it, looking up who to report it to and sending it directly to there, you just address it to the domain name at abuse.net. And the abuse.net machines redirect it to the appropriate people. It saves you a lot of time.
Now, in this example, angelfire.com. We're losing the level on the... Okay, there we go. Angelfire.com's upstream is exodus.net, at least the way that we got there. It's possible that a company like angelfire.com has multiple upstream providers, but the one we got routed through was exodus.net. And if you move up from there, the next upstream is icg.net. The first one that has a number, it's hard to say what that is, but chances are that's a router that they don't have a reverse DNS mapping for. That's probably their either their firewall or their front door to the rest of the internet.
Another thing you sometimes want to do if you're doing trace routes like this is to find out if they are multi-homed, if they have multiple backbones, you want to trace route from other places. The way you can do that, assuming you don't have accounts like all over the world, which none of us probably do, you can go to a couple different places. There's traceroute.org, and that gives you a list basically by country of places you can trace route from.
Sam Spade will trace.
Sam Spade will also trace route it. Sam Spade is another incredibly useful web utility. It'll check for open relays. It'll trace route. It will do lookups. It will tell you who owns.
Let's pull that one out. You want to pull it?
Yeah. Pull up Sam Spade. By the way, I'm a big proponent of samspade.org because that's how I learned how to do most of this stuff. Is to go to Sam Spade, to read their tutorials, read their FAQs, sit down and use and experiment with the tools. It's a very friendly site, and if you're new to this, that's the first place to go because the tutorials are written for the entry level. And again, the tools are very useful.
Another place you have to report people to if they're being obstinate or won't fix their problems are the various black hole lists, such as maps, if they're really bad. There are other places that have similar kind of black hole lists. The most prominent one I can think of off the top of my head is ORBS, which is the Open Relay Behavior Modification System. It's not the blocking system. That's run out of New Zealand by a rather...
Interesting,
yes, that's a good word for it. A guy named by Alan Brown. Basically, ORBS just lists open relays. Those are the email servers that will accept mail from anywhere and just send it on. Most of the spam you get is usually sent through open relays. The server that the mail is coming through usually has no idea that it's being used as an open relay. ORBS just lists all of those, so people can block by that. It has a much higher collateral damage, as you were talking about, rate. For example, at least last time I checked, the entire University of Virginia was listed in there. They tended to list entire universities since universities are pretty open.
I wanted to...
All of AboveNet is in there.
Oh, and evidently all of AboveNet is in there. If you go on the spam mail list, basically, you just have to wait a couple of days and another flame war about ORBS will come up. AOL submitted their own servers to ORBS at one point, which...
it
reported itself as an open relay. Scott Crane, who was the... lists his job title as Spam Denista at AOL, submitted them, and... the whole fact that they submitted themselves actually led to a lively discussion on Slashdot about it. But
And by the way, our AOLer in the audience, remember that name, Scott Crane, because he's the guy that, in effect, runs most of the abuse department for AOL. And he's a very abused individual, a very harried. He's runs around with his head chopped off most of the time. I got a lot of respect for the man. I just don't see how he even copes. We see him post on SpamMail every once in a while. Every time somebody says something nasty about AOL, he usually pops up. But there are a lot of people out there that hide behind the computer screen working their tails off to clean up the internet, and he is just one of many, many people out there who are unsung heroes. So I want to get my AOL plug in.
We have been rewriting this for a while, and we kind of accelerated it, so we'd have it for y'all. We've got we rewrote some documents and put a how-to report email abuse. It does not necessarily get into the technical details. I can give you some other URLs for absolute technical details. If you don't know what an email header is, I have a site that has pictures that will tell you exactly what everything in a header is. And there's some more out there. But this deals more with what to report, how you should report it, who you should report it to.
Question.
All right. One more thing I wanted to bring up. We talked about JavaScript and spam. Mm-hmm. I've noticed an increasing trend toward not only spam, but legitimate commercial email that you signed up for a list with a legitimate company and they sent you a marketing message. They will embed something. Email gives you the option of something called a return receipt, mm-hmm. but a lot of people aren't using it. They're doing something different. What they'll do is they'll put like a one-pixel graphic in the email, and the graphic isn't designed to show up. It comes with some kind of encoding or tag that identifies that you actually read the mail, and simply by loading the graphic, you acknowledge to the sender or the spammer that you read the mail. So I'm now at the point where if I receive a spam in my inbox, I disconnect from the internet before I click on it or select it.
They are doing more than that. Some of them are setting cookies that are keyed to your email address that then turn around and track you.
And that's why I turn all that stuff off before.
Yeah. I blocked to put in a personal firewall, and my Outlook Express is not allowed to talk to the web. It's only allowed to talk to the mail servers.
Yeah, I made the mistake of leaving JavaScript on one time when I was doing spam reports, and had explained to my boss why I had 14 windows full of porn up whenever he came by.
I was wondering, you have any extra trouble with out-of-country spammers? You know, taking care of the problem from, like, computer systems in, like, Bulgaria or somewhere.
Most of the stuff I see from foreign is through Open Relays.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of stuff starting to originate out of Argentina and Spain.
And Taiwan.
And Taiwan.
There's been talk of blocking...
But most of that will be an Open Relay.
Yeah. There's been talk of blocking entire countries by time by domain.
And,
but it looks like a lot of the, especially like the Asian countries like Korea and China, have actually started trying to fix the problems. But we'll see a lot out like Argentina and Taiwan. And you can report it using the babelfish.altavista, which is a translation program. It helps a lot when you're reporting into different languages. But other than that, you know, I don't cut them too much slack. I just kind of block them and go on.
I have two questions. I'd heard about that pixel trick, mm-hmm. and I use Netscape, and I turned off view attachments inline. Will that protect me from the JavaScript also?
You need to make sure you view your mail in plain text and not HTML.
Okay.
I know how to do it in IE. I don't know how to do it in
It's
Netscape.
You just go under Edit to Preferences and to Mail and News. It's in that section.
And you can set them to only run on permission, so you know when they're executing.
My other question was maybe technical. I'm with a small ISP, so I think I'm kind of flying under the wire. I don't get much spam to start with. But I noticed that a surprising amount of it is dated prior to like 1997 or 98.
That's
so I just set my filter to dump it automatically. Why does that happen?
They intentionally set the date earlier so that it appears at the top of your inbox. Because most people have their inbox done by date, so that the later mail is down at the bottom, and boom, it comes right up at the top because it looks older. A lot of people do that just because they've screwed up their mail programs, too, and that's kind of annoying.
Well, it's convenient.
Yeah. I get a lot of mail from the future, too, especially right around the beginning of the year. There was a number of people who just went ahead and set it for after Y2K for some reason.
Over the years, because I've been more internet literate than most of my family, you know, they've been coming to me and asking questions about stuff. And there's all these, what I call the social viruses that go around email, like, don't open a letter with a subject line of such and such because it'll erase your hard drive, and da-da-da. And I've been telling them, no, you're not going to have anything bad happen to your computer just by opening a letter, but don't run the attachments. You can read the letter, but don't run the attachments. But now it sounds like with this JavaScript stuff, there really is a risk.
Yeah.
And so how serious is the threat? I mean, is it possible that someone could just open a letter, not run any attachments, and they really could be doing serious damage to their computer?
Yes.
Yes.
Is it the
VBS one that went out?
Yeah, if you use, especially if they're using all Microsoft products and they haven't set any of the security, the default security, there was at the Usenix Security Symposium last summer, there was a large discussion about this and how easy it is to basically the average computer. Like as it comes off the rack, if you haven't done anything to it, it's very easy to host it just with an email, but they don't have to click anything on. Or it won't let you not click on it, basically.
So I have to wonder why someone hasn't sent out a virus letter like that that's just gone through trashing hard drives across the world, if it's that easy.
It's been done.
There was one that was maybe 3-4 weeks ago, was it, or longer, that it was a virtual BASIC script. And machines were executing it on preview.
Oh, I thought that was when you actually had to run the script. You had
some
to double-click
on
it to run the script.
Depending on your settings and what mail software you're using.
The problem also with ones like that, it's kind of like in the real world. The more destructive a virus is, the harder it is for it to propagate because it tends to trash the machines as it goes along. Also, whenever machines start getting completely trashed, people take more drastic action than like what happened with I Love You, which at our local city hall, all the government employees were clicking on the I Love You virus because they knew they could go home if their machine got trashed.
I got 5 of those.
City of Charlottesville.
Yeah, I work for a small ISP, and I've noticed we actually recently installed an antivirus software that scans all incoming and outgoing email. And there's several viruses that you may not even know exist, like the cackworm, that is actually very widespread. People don't realize that they have it on their system. It's a VB script, and all it does is one day out of the month, I think, or one day out of the week, it blocks access to your email program.
The first day.
But what's amazing is that we found that probably about 20-30% of our subscribers actually had the virus on their system. And I have a feeling that there are probably more viruses out there that certain systems are affected more, but since it's low impact, a lot of people have it, and you have to be careful about those types of things.
Yeah, particularly ones like that when people, they just figure there's something wrong with their program for that day, and they just reboot their machine, or they just go ahead and cut offline and just go back the next day. They don't notice it, and those are the same people that aren't running antivirus programs, things like that. There are a large number out there, and basically it's, you know, accepting email from somebody you don't know is like finding a needle in Times Square and jabbing it in your arm, you know.
I ended up with that KAK, and unless somebody had to, thankfully somebody found it and told it was on a listserv, and they went on the listserv and said, by the way, you didn't even have to click on this, congratulations, since you have the listserv, you probably have this. But there is something that you can download in from the Microsoft website to prevent it from taking a hold. Of course, I found it out afterwards. But.
Well, they probably made the patch afterwards. It seems like every time something new comes up, Microsoft creates another patch.
I had a bout with Happy 99.
There's actually kind of bring it in a similar vein, but bringing it closer back to spam was there are certain adult websites that what they use nowadays is they'll actually trick the people going to them to downloading executable files, which will send out email to everybody they know advertising the site. We had a user, my ISP, who was had a lot of business partners in his address book, and he was known as to be very conservative and type of guy, and suddenly everybody he knew got email from him advertising this very raunchy porno site, and he claimed that somebody forged his name and everything like that and reported it, and when we looked into it, we found out what really happened. It was that he had actually downloaded and executed the file, or somebody on his computer had. And needless to say, he still gets joked about by his partners.
So since you guys brought up people being tricked into sending spam, I had a quick question for you. Is that I've actually wanted to? It's one of my favorite Sean Mike quotes. Is that since now that Joe Green user can run down to Walmart and pull a copy of Red Hat 6.0 from the bin and slap it on his computer, that ships with default open relays. You guys have talked about computers with open relays before during this panel and how it gets you dumped in the orbs list, and that I guess that could conceivably be a problem when people are trying to expand and explore something like Linux, but don't realize that that's opening them up to be used as a spammer. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's true. Windows 2000 actually originally one of the betas was shipping with an open relay built in, and that got noticed and pounded on. But that's one of the problems, and that's why some ISPs like MindSpring won't allow outgoing port 25 connections, SMTP connections. It's to help keep their users from trying to connect to open relays elsewhere. The only real defense, there's only two real defenses you have against somebody who goes and says finds Red Hat 5.2 for $5, is either having the ISP block port 25 going in or out, which a lot of users don't like. To be completely honest, with my company, our remote users in New York and in San Francisco all use MindSpring, and it annoys the hell out of me having the port 25 blocked because they can't use our server. Or it's educating the users. That's something that I think is as much the Linux distributions or, Python, FreeBSD in my case. They have to educate the people that are purchasing their products and, keep them up to date. But if the user doesn't want to learn, he's not going to learn.
Red Hat has stopped, and it ships with SendMail, but it does not install by default, and anything 8.93 or up is now closed by default, which is a good thing.
The commercial release that started that, I think, was 6.2.
Okay, I thought it was 6.1, but
Yeah, it's... If you have a user that's ignorant or... I don't want to say malicious because it implies that he knows what he's doing, but it's more than easy enough to turn your a fairly innocuous computer into a completely open relay, and I've even just recently, like this week, I've got a number of open relays that were 8.93, which is supposed to be installed by default to be closed, but they've hacked around with it and now it's open again.
And the scary thing is there's so many cable and DSL static connections now, and people are starting to run servers, and there are people out there scanning for them.
Yeah, the thing is, if you have a DSL connection or if you have a cable modem, which, by the way, I have, you're online all the time. And if you have a server running in any of your services on your computer, it's there all the time. Ports are open. They can find the ports. And they can use them. So all of this stuff we're talking about, some of you may not understand all of it, but the key is if you're on a cable modem or on DSL, be very careful.
And if you install the MTAs, if you install the mail transport agents, don't even install them unless you, A, really need to be running a mail server, or B, really know how to run a mail server. Because I had somebody ask me about installing a mail server, and I asked him what MTA was going to use and what version and a few things, and he had couldn't even name two mail programs. I was like, you don't need to be running a server. Huh?
What's a mail server?
Running a server?
No,
What is a mail server?
A mail server is the is usually the dedicated computer at your ISP, but all it does is it accepts the incoming mail. Whenever you check your email, you kind of your computer contacts it and asks if it has any new mail for you, and then you download it. And if you send mail, your computer sends the mail to that machine, which then figures out where to send it next. Just for clarification, an open relay server is a mail server that accepts mail from anywhere. Anybody in the world can connect to it and send mail on to somewhere else, not locally. One of the things that spammers do nowadays, which is really, really annoying, is that instead of trying to relay their mail through an open relay or whatever, they'll just connect to a mail server directly and just spam everybody on that mail server. Any of you were here for the anti-spam panel last year, we had a Tom to Tom from Mindspring, and he was talking about how they could see where spammers would connect to the machine mm-hmm. and do what's called an EXPN command. Mm-hmm. I forget what it actually stands for, and just go through like an alphabetical list of possible usernames to see which ones worked, and then they would later connect to the machine and spam them all directly. That's called a direct MX spam.
And that's why we have what's called the DUL, which is the dial-up users list, which people use to block dial-up IP addresses to keep them from connecting directly to their mail servers.
Uh-huh. So I've seen where it looked like at work or at home that it looked like basically someone spammed every single person at the ISP. Why doesn't the ISP catch that? I mean, how are they getting around that?
That is, speaking from the ISP point of view, it's really hard to see that when it's happening. Because usually, if you have an ISP with any number of users, you're getting a ton of mail constantly to begin with. And so you're seeing connections of people sending mail, but you don't notice it right away unless you have the proper safeguards in there. And to be honest, most ISPs are too understaffed. And probably the majority of the staff at the ISPs doesn't know enough about what's going on to recognize it in time. It doesn't take too long to do this. And now if an ISP does, they tend to do block it. And that's another reason why spamming is bad, is that connections like that, they can suck up a lot of CPU usage on the mail server. Cornerstone, I know, has had their mail server die a couple of times because of people doing that. It's a very bad thing for the mail server. You lose legitimate mail in the meantime. But it's really hard to see. You have to treat it, basically you have to treat it like it is, and it's pretty much a denial of service attack. And most ISPs just aren't ready for that. And there's also so many people sending mail anyway. It's hard to determine when it's legitimate or not.
Unless they start getting huge numbers of bounces, if they're just a dictionary run in progress where the addresses may or may not be good. But if they've cleaned the addresses,
that's why that's why spammers connect to do the EXPN trick, is to clear out all the bounces. And then that way, if you're logged in, say, to the Postmaster email account where the mail bounces to, if you're the administrator, and all of a sudden you get 10,000 bounces, you know you're under a spam run. But if you don't get any, a lot of times it's hard to tell.
Dictionary attack. Let me explain what that is. That's where a spammer will take, as an example, on at home, I'm Joe something. They will start saying Joe 1, and then they'll go to joe200@home.com, and that will be their spam run. And 20 or 30 of those addresses might be good, and the rest of them might be bad. That's called a dictionary spam.
They also do it. They don't do it all at once. They'll have multiple dial-ups connecting from multiple places so that it spreads the work out, basically kind of multitasking between different machines.
I already know a little bit about this topic myself. I'd like to hear what you guys have to say about it. There have already been a number of legal cases that have taken down some spammers. There have been one or two cases that have upheld it in some way. But what do you know about, and what we've talked a lot about what we as users can do about spam ourselves. What I'd like to know is what can we as citizens do about spam and legally?
I would say the biggest thing is the pre-existing there's laws in certain states, but the first thing I'd always say to look for is the pre-existing laws, such as the stock fraud, the pump and dump scams, where a spammer sends you about this like penny stock and says, you know, oh, this is a great stock, it's going to take off, and they wait for a bunch of people to buy the stock, and then the spammer sells off all their shares. And if it just goes from a penny to a nickel, usually the spammer has enough shares that they dump them all, make a few bucks, and then the stock drops back down to a penny. Go after, use pre-existing laws such as the stock laws,
MLM, Ponzi schemes, and
yeah,
MLM,
Ponzi schemes, make money fast type spams, everybody's favorite. With like porno spams, a lot of times, kind of keep your eyes open because sometimes you'll get mail advertising illegal porn sites. There's a great story online, and I cannot remember the URL. In the title of it's Butt Officer, I Don't Even Own a Pornograph.
KGB.
Yeah, KGB. Basically, a guy got had child porn people forging his domain name. You kind of go after with general laws like that. And then there's the current pre-existing anti-spam laws, like in Washington and California and
Tennessee.
I know the most about the Virginia one because that's where I'm from. I know it hasn't been contested in court yet. So the question is basically on how the state itself is handling it. The question would be is as a citizen, you've got to pressure. If you think this should be against the law, you need to talk to your politicians, and you're going to have to see how they're enforcing the laws that exist. And if they're not, find out why they're not enforcing them. At least in my opinion, maybe you guys might feel differently.
Because even in Georgia, there is some, and I've talked to the state AG's office, there are some provisions of the computer fraud law that they could possibly use if they got enough incentive to do it.
And by the way, I love the penny stock spammer. He is my favorite. I dump on him every chance I get. And I can honestly say that messages sent to enforcement@sec.gov are listened to, because I've received several phone calls from several SEC people looking for more information about this guy and a couple of others. So I do know, and I don't publish this very often, but I do know they listen and they respond to emails, especially from citizens. So if you get a stock spam or a pump and dump scheme, complain, and you'll be surprised what you can get with that.
There's also the Federal Trade Commission, at least used to. I don't know if they still do. They'd accept complaints, particularly if it's false advertising type of things.
The FTC address is dead.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But the biggest thing to remember too is if you as a citizen, and if there's any government officials in here, I apologize ahead of time, but for the most part, they're not too bright when it comes to computers, and they don't really understand, what the big deal is, because they're not the ones online most of the time. They don't, they're kind of when it comes to being online, they tend to be kind of clueless about it.
I'm gonna add something kind of off the wall. That's something everybody can do. Is there's a little thing called the Boulder Pledge, and
a what?
The Boulder Pledge.
Okay.
And that states that you will not purchase anything or purchase from any company that uses unsolicited mail as an advertising medium. And when you have unsolicited mail being sent from The Gap and some places like that, you can get their attention. And I know of somebody that had an account with a large online stock agency. They spammed him, and he moved a six-figure account out immediately and told them why. So,
boycotting works.
Yeah.
Kind of technical, but also the emails I've noticed I've gotten will be sent to undisclosed recipient, or actually have nothing in the to header. How does that get to
BCC.
Me?
Blind carbon copy. There's when you send mail, there's three different fields you can fill out to send mail. There's the to field, which everybody's familiar with. CC, which is carbon copy, and there's another one that's blind carbon copy. And that's where you can't see who, when you get a blind carbon copy, anybody who's in the BCC field, it's not listed. Sometimes, depending on your mail, on the MTA, the mail server, or on the individual's machine, depends on how the, if it just says undisclosed recipients, that's actually.
It's the envelope information.
Yeah, the undisclosed recipients also is some mailing list software. Some spammers will set up mailing lists, like on their own machine, or at a machine that they have control over, and fill in all the addresses they want to spam to. Because then what they all they have to do is upload one message, and then the mail server itself takes care of propagating them to everybody.
But what happens is when the two mail machines are talking to each other, there are commands. There's mail from, which is will show up in your email header as a it's not the from. What is the first line? Received.
I can't remember off the top of my head. Yeah, the first line's the receive line.
It's an R. But anyway, it will show up as an extra header. It's not the actual from. The next command that you type is receipt to. And the receipt to is what's called the envelope information. It's the information that actually gets it to your ISP's mail server. The mail server delivers the mail and then discards that information. Some headers will say envelope from and will give you the email address, and that's the BCC or the receipt to, but that's how you get it, but that information's discarded. The stuff that's actually in the to and from is meaningless.
So somehow they had to have gotten a hold of my specific address.
Yes, they have to send it to your address.
Somehow.
It just does not show up in the to from that you see.
Or they could be spamming a mailing list that you're on. Depending on how the mailing list is, it's possible. So.
Well, if your friends are sending you a list of 250 names, here's the latest joke I've got.
Exactly.
Then there's people out there harvesting those emails.
They harvest you now.
They know they're real already.
I spoof my address when I post to some of the news groups, but I don't really have a lot of people I email back and forth to, and I don't get a lot of, I'm one of 10 or 15 people something's addressed to.
Okay, here's a cute little trick, and if you're going to start a new email account, this is a good little trick. Go to Deja News and run an open search on the first part of your email address at asterisk. So, like, my mail abuse address is Margie, so I would go to Deja News and do a Deja search on Margie at asterisk. And I've had people complaining that they're getting all this spam and they don't understand it because they've never used their email address. And when you go to Deja, there's 1,600 people posting with Margie at or Joe at or whatever. What the spammers do is take those first part of the valid addresses and then send them to those addresses at AOL, at Mindspring, at AT&T, at Earthlink. Because if somebody's using them, the odds are other people are using them. Deja.com.
And another thing is not Deja.
Deja.
Yeah, another thing is also is that that spammers will do
and go
is
to power search.
If the person who had the address before you, if you have a very common address like at a big provider, it's a possibility that somebody had that address before you, and they could be getting legitimate mail or they could be getting spam mail. We've had users at Cornerstone that the previous user was a heavy Usenet poster, posting always to the news groups and never changed his address or anything. And just got a ton of spam. And then we closed his account, and he went on, and somebody else came up and signed up for the same address, and we gave it to him, and all that spam just kept coming in. And there's not much you could do about that, unfortunately.
You're what? That's, think of how many.
Panthers.
There's also people in the news group luring you to email them. So
don't post to alt test. Okay, that's a very bad place to post because they harvest alt tests.
Unless we want to post your friend's name. But
Oh, I wanted to throw one more thing in since they were talking about email and these programs. There are things they call ratware. And what that is a special spammer email program that hides or changes the to and from addresses received addresses. It goes in and basically frauds the entire email so that you can't tell where it came from.
Does everybody know what we're talking about when we're talking about email headers? Okay.
Okay. The in effect, it's a forged
forged tethers. And there are ways to track these people down, but... but that's called ratware, and if you see that, or you see oddball addresses, chances are they're using a special program to send just a big spam run so they can hide their addresses. So there are things that they that these spammers are doing. There's every trick in the book. These people are writing programs every day to get around people like us who complain all the time. So that's something you need to be aware of.
Are there certain ISPs who are more helpful on this?
Those are the white hats.
How do you find them?
One of the things to do is if you're looking for a new ISP, first thing to do is to check their web page. Assuming you already have internet access and you're looking for an ISP. check their web page, see what their policies are. See if they have anything listed there for what they will, if what they'll do if you receive spam, and also what they'll do if somebody on their system spams, because you might get an ISP that's more than willing to tell you, oh yeah, we'll help you or whatever, but if they don't actually do anything about spam, then eventually the ISP will end up in the RBL and you'll be in there with them unless you switch. And also, if you just ask around. You can ask like on the spam mail list, I'm looking for an ISP in this area. Does anybody have any good suggestions for a good one? And people will say, I've dealt with this one and they're rat bastards. We can't stand them. you get a lot more of those than these guys are good. But, you'll get, these guys are stand-up people. For example, I could think of, if you see like Errol's, they have a rather almost famous
RCN.
Abuse team with a Afterburner and his crew, and they will accept spam. If you get spammed, you can send it to them, and they'll take care of it for you, and their abuse team has really creative ways to get rid of the spammers on their system. I like to think whenever I was at Cornerstone that it was pretty good that way, but since then they've been a little understaffed since they lost half their engineering.
And I am going to get a cable modem from Time Warner. Mm-hmm. Is that means that I have a fixed ISP?
Maybe.
That the Time Warner is going to be my ISP?
Yes.
Yes.
Time Warner will always be your ISP.
Are there any good or bad?
That's Roadrunner, right?
Uh-huh.
Time Warner is Roadrunner.
I think it's Roadrunner, yeah.
They're not bad.
I'll make a suggestion to you. One of the things that I would do personally is I would never use my Roadrunner at home Time Warner address for anything to do with the internet. I would go up and I would get a mail and news account or a Hotmail account or one of the freebie accounts and use that as your primary email address instead of using your cable modem address, because if you make the mistake of using your real serious email address anywhere and it's publicly captured, from that moment on, you're going to get spam. So if you have access to the internet via DSL or cable modem, use an internet-based email account that you don't pay anything for, and that is one good way to control how much email you get. There's just so many benefits to it.
Another thing you can do is if a lot of ISPs will give you what they call aliases off your email address, mm-hmm. and that's when you get a second or a third address, which is nothing more than goes straight to your primary address. And I use a lot of those, particularly if you're signing up for like a new product where you have to get the registration info back by email, mm-hmm. but it's a product that you're afraid that they're going to keep emailing you even if you tell them not to. You set up a new alias and something completely unrelated to your normal address. The mail goes there and goes straight to your normal address, and then if they keep emailing you, you can kill the alias and you stop getting the mail.
I have another little evil trick. I have a domain
and basically I have infinite email addresses. So if I go and I buy something from or sign up for a list from, you know, Joe Smith, the email address that's used is joesmith@mydomain.com. So if I start getting spammed on that address, I know exactly where it came from. You can tag addresses, too, with pluses.
You can use a mail and news account and put everything into a deleted folder if it's not too easy, and then have your deleted folder automatically flushed.
And some ISPs do have front-end filters, too. Spaminator on Mindspring, Brightmail.
That's,
there are several.
That's actually the filters. You know, you might want to also ask your ISP if you're looking for a new one, what kind of filters they have on incoming mail. If they use the RBL, or if they use ORBs, or if they use the DUL, if they, you know, if they
RSS.
Have spam RSS, if they have like Spaminator for Mindspring, Cornerstone. We used a really crappy mail server program called Post.Office. And it wouldn't let us use the RBL or whatever, so we had to maintain our own filter list. And that was actually one of the ways that spammers like would kill our mail server was they would send us a whole bunch of spam and we'd be blocked, but it spent so much time looking up the blocks to see if it should block the mail that the server couldn't do anything else.
Quick question. What would you guys do about getting mail from overseas places? Because I know about 3/4 of all my spam now comes from places like Japan or China or Czechoslovakia and places like that. And whenever I put abuse at any version of the domain name I can find in the headers and all, Mindspring's email server comes back and says DNS entry can't be found, or this server doesn't have email or anything like that.
If it says DNS entry not found, it's a forged domain name. Use Postmaster, first of all. Postmaster is required to be active at every mail server, according to RFC. That doesn't mean it is, but if Postmaster's not working, then they have huge problems to begin with.
The other thing to say is go after the web page they're spamming. Track down who's hosting the email. I mean, excuse me, the web page, and use Sam Spade to track that, find out where their real web page is, and go after that, because chances are it's hosted in the U.S.
Okay, we can take two more questions.
If there actually are two more questions.
Oh, I have a door prize for somebody.
Do you have any suggestions for a good software Windows firewall?
Firewall. Black Ice Defender. That's what I use.
That's one of them.
Yeah, that's what I use to all the Windows machines on my company there. It gets the job done. The best thing about Windows is that it's not multi-user, so it's kind of hard for the do anything but just host your machine. So, Black Ice.
That's just one of many. And some of them are free. I can name several that are just out and out free. Just go search the internet for firewalls. You'll find several free ones. And some of them are pretty good.
You also want to check www.securityfocus.com. They'll have a lot of information on there.
Oh, one more site, and this is http://com.2/bchicken. A gentleman by the name of Beavis runs that website and mail list, and it's a very, very good internet security Trojan web page and email list, and I like this guy, and I like to advertise his site because he has taught me an awful lot about Trojans and worms and viruses and just things to do to your system at home to keep you safe. Now, all right, I have one winner already, but who would be who's the newest person on the internet in this room? Who just started?
Is it?
Yeah, I'm looking for the newest people on the internet. Yeah. I'm looking for greenies. All right, I got you, and I got you.
Oh, no.
Here it comes. Come get your spam.